his arm on the rock ahead of him. Ryan moved behind a shelf of rock and brought the Steyr to his shoulder, scanning the new arrivals through the rifle scope. None of them appeared to be dressed in green, but they weren't easy living men either. Scars and weapons were worn like badges of office. The Jeep stopped less than 15 yards from Doc and Christie's position. Ryan noticed that the steering wheels for the WAGs were on the opposite side than he was used to. He remembered from bits and pieces of conversations between different drivers he'd known while traveling with a trader that the people of England and a few other countries drove on the left side of the street. It seemed alien to Ryan, but the vehicle handled admirably. A short, broad man dressed in a leather flying jacket and aviator's cap and goggles stood up in the driver's seat and held on to the front windshield. He reached up and took a well-chewed cigar from the corner of his wide, thick-lipped mouth.
Well, bloody hell, people! These effing rescue efforts only go so fucking far now! Shoulda get off the bloody park!
Who the hell are you?
That Jack Gehring. These are my boys. Devil take them if they ain't.
What's your interest in us?
You got these bloody tree huggers chasing you like to set your ass on fire if they catch you. You figure a bloke needs much more in this day and age than a common enemy?
I do.
We're between a rock and a hard place, but they're against us, too.
Make them pay for the privilege, though.
Garrick waved at the machine gunner. The heavy assault gun came around and pointed up the mountainside. A line of 50-caliber bullets smashed into the mountainside. Through the brush, Ryan spotted two Celts as they went down. The others found cover wherever it was available.
You're a bloody fool if you don't take the hand it's offered. Never had anybody turn down a bona fide rescue before.
I'm still looking for the strings.
Take a look at what you have to trade. I'm no friggin' stone art, except for those fucking would-be dryads.
I don't know what that is, but it doesn't sound complimentary. Maybe I'm not exactly convinced we need rescuing.
Well, you give it 15 minutes, and you're gonna be convinced all to hell. We had to trouble ourselves. There's a search party after us. Could be they'll take it out on you and yours when they can't catch us.
What he says is true, Ryan. We don't exactly have a lot of choices.
Your call, mate. But this train's leaving now.
All right. Where do you want us?
You heading up this outfit?
Yeah.
You're with me. Cut. Find another spot.
The man in the rear passenger side seat shot Ryan a sour look, but quickly scrambled out of the vehicle. Garrett pointed at the nearest pickup truck.
Rest of you find places in that wag. Settle in tight as you can. Gonna be bumpy before it gets better.
No! No!
Hey!
Jack suddenly found himself in a tussle with Tarragon, who had awakened with a look of fear on his face. The young Celt obviously preferred being left behind to going with Garrick and his crew. Ryan grabbed the wounded boy by the shoulder.
Hey!
What's the matter with you?
If I go with you, they'll kill me!
You stay here. Pepper and his little group will kill you.
Let me go!
Tarragon took a step to one side and launched a fist at Jack. Jack moved around the blow easily.
Enough!
Ryan wrapped the butt of the Sig Sauer against Tarragon's forehead with enough force to stun the boy without badly injuring him. He watched the boy's eyes roll up into his head. Ryan felt bad about hitting the wounded boy, but there was no way he was going to leave him behind while Mildred was held prisoner. He bent down, grabbed Tarragon's clothing, and took the boy to the wag Christie and Doc had already climbed into. Ryan shoved the boy into the back of the vehicle. A bearded man with a ragged scar through his lower lip stood up in the back of the wag and approached the unconscious boy.
Well, well, well. Got us an effing tree hugger right here. Easy.
Slipped a hooked knife from his belt, then reached down and grabbed the boy's hair. Ryan moved in a blur of action, lifting up the Steyr, then butt-stroking the man in the face. The man fell over the side of the wag, as if he'd been poleaxed. The other men shot for their weapons. Ryan and his team had already drawn theirs, and lines had been drawn between the two groups.
All right, stand down! Stand down, the lot of you mangy dogs! Got something special in your heart for that bloody tree hugger?
I lost one of my people when the Celts started this. This boy's our prisoner. Could be he's the only thing that'll help us get our friend back.
All right, I can understand that. And if I can understand it, then you dogs can too. I say this once, so clean your fucking ears out and listen. Any man touches that boy, he answers to me. And he answers to his maker. And that's all I got to say about it.
Suddenly, Ryan glimpsed movement on the ridge, back along the tracks the wags had made coming down into the valley. horsemen crested the hill. A rider in long green robes with a silver brocade led them.
It's him! Prince Bolt himself! You don't know if that's the prince? Not with the way these tree huggers can bend a man's vision around with their magic.
The Celts on horseback approached at a gallop, their weapons blazing. Motorized vehicles joined the pursuit, and a half dozen wags now threaded their way through the horses along with motorcycles.
Let's go! Now!
Sprinting, Ryan caught up with the Jeep and pulled himself in behind Garrick. He settled into the seat and kept his head low as bullets whacked branches over their heads.
Where are we headed to?
New London! You're not from around here, are ya?
It wasn't a road so much as a trail they followed. Garrick's men were obviously well-versed in scooting along the treacherous terrain, not panicking when soft ground gave way beneath them and sent the wags whining yards out of the path they'd chosen. They passed through a narrow notch in the craggy terrain, which to Ryan had looked like a gunside carved between the rocky slopes. The land on the other side of the notch was all mountain. Beyond that, they found the emerald green of an ocean, stretching out as far as the eye could see. Ryan stood with Doc and Garrick on a promontory overlooking a sheer drop to the water below. He peered hard at the white-capped waters battering the base of the cliff, more than 100 feet below.
The English Channel. We're only hours from London.
London? You're talking about New London now, aren't you, mate? The only London there is New London, about 2 hours north and east of here. During the nuke storm, the original London was hit all to bleeding hell by the bombs.
I beseech you, sir, to tell me how bad the damage was.
There used to be a river that ran through it.
The Thames. I knew it well.
And they told me in the old days it flowed through the city and emptied into the North Sea. Used it for shipping and the like. I've seen some pics of London. Must have been quite a place to see in its time. Ah, it's mostly all gone now. When those bombs hit, they caused a rift in the land that drank London down and brought the North Sea into the heart of England. Put the whole place 40 and 50 feet underwater. Almost cut this lower section of the island off from the rest of the country.
It is a shame.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
Doc moved off, heading back to the wag where Christy and the others were.
Doc was kind of close to this part of the world. He was hoping to visit what was left of London.
Is that what brought you out here?
No.
We're gonna have a talk about that, you and me, and what you're planning on doing with that young Celt you brought along with you.
Yeah.
Ryan knew they would have to talk. If Garrick knew the Celts and knew the land they lived on, he was going to need that knowledge for any rescue attempt the companions might make to get Mildred back with them. However, that didn't mean giving the man all of the truth. How far to New London?
Couple hours hard driving.
What kind of setup is there?
It's a big thorp. A bloke named Taylor Henstall runs things. He's got 3 men working with him to keep things running smooth. Bobby Krieger, who's the thorp shipmaster.
Shipmaster?
Krieger's sire built the first clipper ships based on some blueprints his grandfather had saved over the years. They come from sailing stock, all of them.
What are the ships being used for?
Defense, mainly. It took Krieger a while to get Henstall to back his plans. Those ships cost a lot. But they're starting to pay for themselves now. He set up a regular trade route with the French. They haven't gotten their shit together enough to build a canoe, much less a boat. Breed like fucking rabbits over there every chance they get. Pox take a lot of them. But there's a few who work salvage operations and bring things to Krieger's crew that we can use in New London. But then there's some diving starting to go on where old London went under. Krieger's found this big belly lowers into the water, lets the swimmers work out of that instead of diving from the top. Still only have a couple of minutes they can work the bottom before they have to come up for another breath of air, though. They're getting a few things back from there, too.
I'd like to see that.
Not me. I like it just fine on dry land. Got some nasty sharks in that area that come up out of the ocean for a snack. Great whites. Big enough to swallow a man in one fucking bite. Some kind of muty strain, Krieger thinks.
That's Krieger. Who else?
Graham Adams. General of the militia. Odd, odd man. Ran a thorp of his own before Enstall persuaded him to throw in his lot.
How'd he do that?
Well, Adams is a hell of a man when it comes to rules and regs. His thorp was filled with laws, and those who didn't toe the line were dead or kicked out. But Enstall pointed out the fact that there was safety in numbers. Basic military concept that Adams didn't have a problem understanding. His place was getting far, but he wasn't self-supportive for the number of people he had. Primarily, he was Robin Hooding neighboring thorps. Ended up getting quite a few people properly pissed at him, including New London.